This is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough. This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze up on the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held onto our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my francais. Now every week the absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching Nebion doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously, I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back, the slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old. And like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy, and we know him.
Watching closely from a perch among the stars, as viewers await the moment when the spirit bomb can charge. Hito Yui self detonates. Yu Yu Hakusho replicates and spits in the spirit well while their chests are pounding hard.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and I welcome you to episode 121. Of the Prerogative, and on this episode, we start Superhero Month! Yes, that's right. It is Superhero Month on Tom's Prerogative. Now, for those first-time listeners who may have never listened to this show or may have only listened sporadically, a certain chosen may have not caught it. Usually, I do Superhero Month in May, but due to numerous reasons that I've explained before in the past two episodes, you know, it's gotten pushed back. And I'm doing it in June. Usually, I do it in May when the summer blockbuster season happens, but... Now, it's here now, and we have many great things planned for Superhero Month. In fact, the next three episodes will feature multiple special guest reviewers joining me to review the shows that I've chosen. But this week I'm going solo to review one of the greatest American animes, and yes, I said animes, of all time in Justice League. And yes, I called it an anime, for those not to show, who've never listened. You know, I have this whole belief system, maybe is a better way to put it, because, you know, there are people that agree and there are people that disagree. In fact, I do a whole panel, and again, thank you to everybody at the most recent convention of Anime Next 2015, who came to the panel. That was increasingly screwed up because I forgot to bring the DVD. Which, it was a funny thing. It's like, I'm going to leave it on my backpack, but I'm trying to make sure I don't forget it. I need to make sure I don't forget it. And sure enough, I forget it. But that's here nor there. But basically, the whole thing is that I believe in the idea that there's three techniques of animation, stop motion, hand-drawn, and CG. And within each technique is individual disciplines or styles. And within hand-drawn, there's cartoon and anime. And then there's one in between called fusion. And what... categorizes hand-drawn animation into one of those three is based upon line work, background 3D depth, space use, frame rate, for that matter. Though frame rate has more to do with differentiating the different techniques, actually. But frame rate and camera use. One thing that doesn't get talked about within animation a lot is the use of the camera. And in particular with hand-drawn animation, cartoons use more simple camera language techniques, simple cuts. It's always set up automatically into a wide or, close shot, or then falls back into its medium shot. But it's very simple language as opposed to anime, which uses a lot of, zooms, zolly, a lot of advanced camera techniques, the circling around, the pan around the character, they'll zoom in, they'll have a crane shot that comes in and everything, and the kid... For a very simple fact, in a cartoon, the camera doesn't move. In an anime, the camera moves. That's the simplest way to really put it. Really, when you watch Justice League, you see that evidence. The camera is always moving. There's zooms. Whether that movement be, the camera itself actually moving, or, the focus moving in on a zoom, or pullback, or zolly, or whatever it is, pans. I mean, advanced camera language is not something that's necessarily about, the most technical, fantastic shots. They can be very simple shots, but the way they're cut together and how many of them, and for that matter, part of camera movement is things like the montage, Einstein's montage, for those who've studied film. And the way a film is also cut together, with this shot and this shot, and you have this angle and this angle, this shot has this angle, and so on, and they create a montage. For instance, the fight scenes of Justice League are a perfect example of this. So, for those reasons, I do consider this an anime, and regardless of whether you consider it an anime or cartoon, it's one of the best American animations ever made in regards to TV series. If we get into American animation, include movies, it's going to be a list filled with Disney as well. But, things like, here, the Bruce Timm / Dinnyverse of DC animated series. Batman animated series, Superman, Justice League Unlimited, you put Static Shock, Batman Beyond in this universe as well. And really, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited... as well, was the magnum opus of Bruce Timm's DC animated universe. And for pretty much, as I call you guys and as I call us, the Tsunami Generation, it's a pretty big influence on us. We grew up with these series, in particular with Justice League, and it has a huge influence on us. So one thing was definitely hard to do was to be able to pull back while watching this series and say, I got to be more logical and look at the thing. Now, and I say that because, when you praise a series, then you say, I grew up with my childhood and I love it. It automatically, I think, brings into question, are you really focused on reviewing it? And that's something I try hard to do. I try very hard to, I love this and have an emotional connection, but I need to pull back and look at it logically and look at it contextually and see what does it do to make me enjoy it. Now, with that being said, it is more of the point I'm like, okay, I enjoy this. Why am I enjoying this? I'm enjoying this for this, 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 and this. And, you start to see patterns form when you review multiple good shows or multiple great shows that you so much enjoy and so many other people enjoy, and you're like, oh, here's what they're all doing. And it's not a matter of, well, if I just do that, well, it's going to work. It's working in context to here's what they're given, and then they do this, this, and this, and it's part of the equation to creating a great series. And so that's pretty much a review for those who've never, again, listen to the show, because this may be the first show for many people, in particular those who came to Tsunami Panel at Anime Next I can't stress how much I love all you guys. You made that panel awesome. If anybody who's listened to the show before, if you've not listened to it, go to the page. Let's watch the part two of the Anime Next Convention special video. It has the first half of that panel. It was just a great job by everybody that was there, including, of course, Absolution Network member Mike. Mike says later, you're like, wait a minute, you're recording? I'm like, yeah, Mike. Why do you think I had a camera in the background? I'm like, oh. And don't worry about Mike. I mean, Mike bushed me enough all weekend long about me reading a book in a D&D game and killing myself, so I this is my turn to get back at him a little bit. But anyways, Warning. Massive rant. If you'd like to fast forward to this, go to the 20-minute mark now. And you know what? The other thing to talk about with this is definitely also, of course, within comics, there's a talk about the lack of diversity and the lack of, you know, female and diverse characters, different colors, having their own comic book. And it's just, I don't want to say I laugh at this, but I find it odd that we say this considering comic books have been some of the most diverse, you know, parts of entertainment in our country. In a time when, you know, a lot of African Americans were still under Jim Crow. There were characters being created like Power Man, John Stewart, Green Lantern, Black Lightning, and so many other characters. And I don't understand why we hate those characters. You know, you go to X-Men, you know, Bishop, Storm, the multitude of characters of different diverse backgrounds, you know, Jubilee, Psylocke, trying to think off the top of my head, Nightcrawler, who's from Germany. So you have all these characters from around the world and different ethnic types and different religions and different, you know, parts around the country. You know, I could talk about the diversity within X-Men all day long. Going to DC, you know, like I said, I mentioned John Stewart. You have Cyborg, you have Steel, you have Static, you know, going to the Milestone character, Static Shock, Icon, Rocket. You know, you want to go Latino, the more recent Blue Beetle, Vibe. And I know a lot of people don't like Vibe, but Vibe still does exist. My point is that there's always been diversity in comics and within comic book animation. You know, you go back to the Super Friends and the sequel seasons of Super Friends when they brought in characters like Black Lightning and Apache Chief. And we may think that they're racist now, but certainly at the time, they were having characters on show that no other show would have. And we need to recognize that. And even if they were using stereotypes, you know, there is such a thing as positive stereotypes. It's not stereotypes that are the problem, it's how are they used. And if a stereotype is used in a positive way, then there's really nothing wrong with it. You know, short and long run is, I feel that this whole discussion about diversity or about, certainly we want more diverse characters and more female characters to have their own comic book. And certainly more diverse and more female creators, writers, and characters like that. I guess where the problem is that we don't need to change the colors, a character's race, sexual preference, or color or belief system to do this. We don't need to take away a kid, you know, sit there and say, well, this character's white and there's too many white people, so we're going to take away this white character's book and replace it. Why can't we have both? Now, certainly, there's a number of books that DC, Marvel, and the other comic companies are licensed because there's a certain amount they can make before it becomes not profitable. And they are businesses, and they are in the sense of making profit. But, you know, long short of it is, We don't need to take away books to create books. And we don't need to take away or change characters. We should be rather creating new characters that are born from this period that can then, you know, if we take care of the character right, they will become just as iconic. You know, look at Static Shock that was created in the 90s, and look at how iconic, you know, everybody knows Static Shock. And that's a great example of that. Quite frankly, I think one thing that, though, personally makes me very emotional about this discussion, personally, is that I feel a lot of it is implanting ideas in kids, and then the kids say those ideas. The kids don't learn this, they are taught this, and then they say that. They are being taught opinions by people who are using children for political gain, and I really have a problem with that. The idea that, you know, a young girl doesn't have any female heroes, or at least any female heroes that her parents like, because they feel all female heroes dress too slutty. You know, Wonder Woman is too slutty? You know, Power Girl is too slutty? You know, quite frankly, going to a character like Starfire, who unfortunately we won't be covering, I'll say this, the Teen Titans series is a series that we're not covering this month. But Starfire, you know, I've been reading Red Hood and the Outlaws for the past couple years, and quite frankly, something that's very underestimated is that they've done more for Corey, aka Starfire, in the past 2-3 years in Red Hood and the Outlaws than they've done with her in the past 20 years. Pretty much since the whole storyline with her and Dick getting married and then getting unmarried. I mean, quite frankly, her whole character seemed to be sometimes centered around, you know, her and Dick relationship, and there needs to be nothing more. And again, I say this because, like, I've read her adventures in Countdown in the mid-2000s where she was with anime, but it always seemed like they really didn't know what to do with her. And they've done more for her, and yet people want to trash on that character because of how the first issue of Red Hood and the Outlaws, which in context, you know, rather than talking about that why it wasn't a good issue and how it certain people didn't like it, you know, it was like, oh, this is DC and DC hates women and all this stuff because they felt they objectified Starfire. Which I can argue, and again, we're getting sort of off stream here, we're about 15 minutes in, and I probably should be getting to the review. I knew this discussion would kind of derail me, but I'm like, I'm gonna go with it anyways. This is definitely something I'll probably talk more about, and you can hear me talk more about over at the Intergalactic Graphic Review podcast that I do with my good friend Edwin, and you know, we have much better discussions there. But certainly, you know, again, it's, I feel it's a lot more political agenda. I feel, you know, to anybody who says there isn't diversity and that these characters don't exist, I've not been reading it. And quite frankly, some of my favorite characters are characters that don't have their own comic book. And, you know, they're great supporting cast. I think there's not enough love giving to the supporting cast. I mean, how much, you know, for Spider-Man fans, how much do we talk about J.J. Jameson and Robert and Robbie and, you know, Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy and Flash Thompson and all of these other supporting characters? Because, again, sometimes some of the best characters aren't the lead character. They are the supporting characters within the book. So it's like, we used to believe in this in the 90s. We used to call this type of, quite frankly, bull out. And, you know, Justice League is a perfect example of really how to do this right. You know, again, Jon Stewart is my Green Lantern. It's not Hal Jordan. It's not Kyle Rayner. It's Jon Stewart. And it's because of this series. And the fact of the matter is, what they did in this series was they took an existing character that existed, made the choice on him, and they built around the character rather than what the color of his skin was. And, you know, a lot of these discussions are being talked about the color of the skin. You know, it's that funny thing of, like, say color of the skin doesn't matter, yet you're acting like color of the skin doesn't matter, or you're acting like, you know, what type of clothing doesn't matter, but you're saying clothing matters. You know, you can't have it both ways. It's a lot of political wrangling. It's something that aggravates me on a daily basis. Because I just feel frustrated by it, because I feel people are, yelling and talking down to people and disrespecting other people's opinion. And we talk a lot about disrespect and hatred and all that stuff. And it just, it does go both ways. You know, hate is hate, regardless of what you call it. What do you call it? Racism, anti-Semitism, sexism. There are people that hate people for different reasons. And just because one group may get more type of discrimination than the other doesn't necessarily mean it's right for that other people that they should get more discrimination. This is not a game of let's make all discrimination fair. We should be making discrimination less, as less as possible. And I think in today's day and world, we've come so far that we sometimes search out for things to be upset about or to find, you know, is wrong with the world. But again, that's a very long 20 minutes. Maybe I should be getting into the review by now. So, I hope that makes you just think. Again, I'm not saying my opinion is above anybody else's, but this is just my words that I try to formulate and tie into an honest yet respectful opinion. Let's get into the review proper. I have to laugh about it because it's like, you know, I've tried to do this like several times and I keep getting caught up on this discussion. So, but let's get into a review of Justice League. Justice League follows famed superheroes Superman, Batman, and other heroes like Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Hawkgirl, and the Martian Manhunter as they uncover an alien threat that tries to take over the world. But after they stop the threat, they realize the importance of a league of heroes to come together to face the growing threats of supervillains teaming up. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Justice League. Welcome back, and let's get right into it, as we always do, with music. And of course, that means let's talk about the theme of Justice League. And my God, I love this theme, you know. One thing I talk about a lot is grandiose, and this has that grandiose. That just, I like this a whole lot more better than the Justice League Unlimited theme. And this is one of probably the few cases where I'll talk about Justice League Unlimited in conjunction. Because definitely, in listening to the theme over and over again, I would also go back, I would go onto YouTube and listen to the Justice League Unlimited theme. And both themes are excellent. But while Justice League Unlimited is just this great rock track, there's a bit more grandiose, more epicness, I think, with this. That personally, I think fits DC a whole lot more. And just especially for, you know, you have these, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 characters. You know, it just fits the overall feel of these characters so much better. I just love the way it built. Dun, da, da, da. Dun, da. Da, 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 da. Da, da, da. And then to the point to where it explodes, and it goes, da, 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 da. You know, and again, in a way, it's very much a military march. And this idea of this league, not necessarily being military, but, you know, again, that whole sort of, like, it gives it sort of a soldier feel to these characters. It's more of this team aspect, as opposed to, again, there's just this League Unlimited, which is Iraq, which is just big bang celebrations, everything exploded everywhere. Da-da-da, 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 da-da-da. While taking notes from the first Justice League theme. And don't get it twisted, I love both themes, but I love Justice League's more, because I love the grandiose, I love the epics, I love the more conclusiveness to teamwork that I think fits the series a whole lot more, where Justice League Unlimited, I feel, is just more of just an awesome theme, and that's it. And both do a great job of what a intro theme is supposed to do. It gets you hyped for the series. And then, of course, there's the overall score. Now, this, I actually do feel, is the weakest point of this series. There are points where I think the score is really good. Individual episodes where I think the score is good. The best episodes of the series, like Wildcard, Terror Beyond, Comfort and Joy, which are some of the more in the second season and later. But Injustice for All, Legends, Savage Time. The better episodes are the best episodes. They're definitely ones that have the best score within them. And it very varied. I think there's a lot more, each character has their own individual themes. And they work very well for, Superman, again, Batman, to take much, it plays off their actual theme that they've used before. Wonder Woman has this very sort of adventurous theme that I really much like. Flash has this very just theme that just fits his character and his character's persona of being sort of the heart of the team. And so on and so on. So I think the scores definitely fit the characters right. Outside of the character themes, it's sort of traditional. And sort of, they don't really do anything new, but they don't do anything spectacular as well. So while most of the themes are really good and really enjoyable to like, and they definitely do their job, they don't have that next level. They didn't take that score to the next level in every episode. Certainly there are episodes where it worked really, really well. I go back to Terror Beyond as one of my favorite episodes because the score was just in perfect conjunction with what was happening on screen, and in particular during Grundy's death scene. So, overall, not the best it could be, but they did a decent job with the score. Let's move on to the animation, and let's talk about the overall animation style, and that means we're talking about Bruce Timm, and Bruce Timm's style is just at its absolute peak of perfection here, with the use of shadows and the way the characters are built. One thing I love that they did is they went back to some more of the original designs. They went back from those Fox designs, in particular with Joker and Batman, that I very much enjoyed. One thing I love is that, again, the way they're able to tweak design for different locations, different planets. The locations they go to in this series are just absolutely magnificent and just show the skill of the artisans and the overall skill of the team. But like I said, it's Bruce Timm's style at its peak and at its perfection. And it's just so well done here. The use of shadow is amazingly well done. And just gives these characters just this realistic feel that make them feel like they're there. While at the same time giving them sort of an Art Deco style that is very reminiscent of that Fleischer Brothers style that it influenced Bruce Timm so much. So you see a bit of the past, you see a bit of the present in there. And you would see how that would later go on influence other shows that have come out now. Because remember, this is a 13-year-old series. And yet, it still looks amazing. I mean, and then going into the individual character designs, like I said, I love that they took Batman back to his original sort of WB Batman design. Same with Superman. I love Wonder Woman's outfit. It's just classic and yet contemporary. She's sexy, but she's not too sexy. She's in that right balance for what Wonder Woman is. Hawk Girl, you know, right design. Again, I did not have much experience with Hawk Girl up until this. And I thought did an extreme great job. Especially the fact that it kind of made her a bit more conservative to, you know, which is one thing I found very funny is that when you look at their costumes, her costume's way more conservative than Wonder Woman's in its own way. And yet, in fact, it's actually probably what a lot of people have been saying they want Wonder Woman's costume to be. And yet, Wonder Woman in her own sort of way is sometimes a bit more conservative of her character is than Hawk Girl. And I probably should have her name here, but so on and so on. So, but out of designs, Green Lanterns, again, just classic, right out of the pretty much for most of these, they felt like they were right out of the comic book. Shara Hall, excuse me. Again, I'm not that big on hot character knowledge. Martian Manhunter, and again, color schemes also. Martian Manhunter is a great example of this. The red with the green, I thought worked very well. And just overall, every character design they did, whether it be existing characters they've done before or not, it is here and it's done to perfection. Really, the only character's design I did not like was Amazo's. And then again, I just really didn't like what they did with that character, and I didn't like that storyline. It's one of those storylines that just never clicked with me. It's one of the sort of filler episodes, mind you, that I... Really, the only filler episode I kind of skipped over in the series, because it's just like... I remembered it, not liking it, and as I was watching it, I got bored with it really quick and everything. It's one of the few, I think, missteps in the series. But that's really it. I mean, characters like Aquaman. I mean, yeah, they're doing Aquaman as Aquaman was then. I mean, it wasn't this series. It was the comics that, you know, put, you know, the harpoon on Aquaman. But again, like, wow. The last time I saw Aquaman was from the Super Friends. And now here's he, and he looks so badass. And it's like, you know, I'm never going to make fun of Aquaman again. Which I'm sure will make the irredeemable Shag very, very, very happy. probably the only thing missing for this series for the irredeemable Shag was Firestorm, but that's a whole nother story. Yes, I'm pimping my friends. A Fire and Water podcast, check it out. but it's just like, I thought the character designs were very much on point. And then action animation. The fights are just the epitome of when, again, going back to the whole idea of the way they cut the fights. The way they'll give this scene just this amount of time and cut this scene together and then move to the next one. And it's always telling this conclusive story and you feel like you're knowing everything that's going on in the fight. You know, it's almost as if you feel like you are pulled back and you're watching the entire fight happen. You are actually in close and watching things as they go, and it's cut at such a pace that it gives you that sense of where you feel like you're seeing everything at the same time. And it gives that sense of time, like, you know, even though you watch Wonder Woman pummel this villain, before you see Green Lantern pummel this villain, you see before Hawk Girl pummel this villain, the way they cut it, it gives a sense of time to where you feel like all of that happened at the same time. So the action animation is just depending. And one thing is, I love how they definitely showcase each character's strength and weakness very well when it needs to fight scenes. To make the characters look strong, and even when something's, you know, part of their weakness, they still look strong in it. So again, it helps present these characters as these grand heroes. That works very, very well. Then you have the background and special effects. And you know, again, we've talked about shadows. It's, you know, really, we need to say that Tim's specialty really is shadows. Because he uses them well to give that realistic feeling to these characters. And make them feel alive and feel there along with the line work. And just the special effects department, just again, whether it be snow, rain, whatever. The shadows of ships, just wonderful designs of ships and everything. Extremely well done. And then, of course, the locations. Whether they be locations on Earth or locations on a planet. Everything's really done. Regardless of where they went, it always felt. And even when you went back to places like Metropolis or Gotham, they felt fresh yet familiar. So they definitely did a great job on the backgrounds. The backgrounds are beautiful. Everything I think Bruce Timm designs and his team designs is just beautiful. With that, time for a break. I'm going to play some promos for some friends. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Superman,
Captain Marvel,
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2.
Sergeant Rock.
The Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow.
Jonah Hex.
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing.
Wonder Woman.
The New Teen Titans.
The Haunted Tank.
Infinity Incorporated.
Worlds will live.
Green Arrow.
Worlds will die.
Supergirl.
The Flash.
And that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America.
The All-Star Squadron.
The Huntress.
Ariana.
The Metal Man.
Firestorm. The Nuclear Man.
The Outsiders.
Green Lantern.
The Blue Beetle.
The Crime Syndicate.
Warlord.
The Guardians of the Universe.
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents...
And many, many more.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at twotruefreaks.com.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like...
Gotcha, Mom!
Or maybe...
Dragon! Flame!
How about...
Tatsuo!
Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientist and engineer spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember...
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Gene, grappler ship's dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise! Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos!
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew... Home was a pen. Humanity... Cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
And welcome back, and let's get into it. Time to get into voice acting. You have Kevin Conroy as Batman, Greg Newburn as Superman, who in this series had taken over for Tim Daly, and we're going to get into that in just a second, that discussion about who's better, Newburn or Daly. Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, the Wonder Woman, as far as I'm concerned, the legendary Michael Rosenbaum as The Flash, Phil Lamar as Green Lantern, though he also played the character of Ed Reis. By the way, going back to George Newbern, funny version, not only does he play Superman, but there's a toy, Comfort and Joy, there's a toy that the kids want called DJ Rubber Ducky. That's also played by George Newbern. Props, dude! Maria Canales as Hawk Girl. And Pytar, as she also plays during the series. And Kara Lumbly as Martian Manhunter. He also plays Chris Black. And Michael Rosenbaum also plays Akiris Chuma, Colonel Joseph, Andre, Deadshot, and Phineas. Wow, what can't be said about this one? I mean, first of all, the entire... protagonist cast here is wonderful. We're going to, rather than talk about protagonist and antagonist, we're going to talk about the main cast, and then I have the list here of all the different voice actors they got, and we'll go over some of the great characters that were done. I love the guy. I mean, first of all, Kevin Conroy is the Batman. You could talk about your, and don't get me wrong, I love, I'm trying to goddamn remember his name, Michael Keaton. I love Michael Keaton as Batman. It's my second favorite. But you can talk about him, you can talk about your Christian Bales, you can talk about your Ben Affleck, you can talk about whoever, you can talk about your Adam West. To me, my Batman is Kevin Conroy. And I don't know how he necessarily feels about that, but again, it just, he nails that voice perfectly. And it's like, whenever I read Batman, that's the voice I hear in my head. The thing I love about this series, and we'll get into it when we get into the story, is that they really allowed these characters to open up. So it allowed, in particular with Kevin Conroy, to expand his Batman voice just to better. It's just, hearing Batman laugh or do jokes out of Kevin Conroy's voice. There's a particular scene to where, in the beginning of the second season, they're, Wonder Woman and Batman are sent to New Genesis, and they're on the ground, and they look up the city, and it's like, he says in the plain, serious Batman voice, I'm gonna need a, what did he call it, grasper? He says, I need a longer, not longer gun, but I need a longer rope, basically. Or, bat hanger, or whatever it's called, and I'm blanking on it, and I hate myself for it now. But, which probably ruins the joke here, but in the animation, it's like saying that serious voice, it's like, did Batman just make a joke? Goddamn, Batman made a joke. Goddamn it. And it seems it really built upon these characters. George Newman, who took over for Tim Daly, and pretty much, I do kind of feel that the way they do the characters are the same. But I think Newbern, again, has become one of those voices I hear more in my head. I just think Newbern is more, natural to it. Like, Daly, I think, has the grandiose, but Newbern has sort of the more, even though this is Superman, you feel the farm boy there. And I think he brings more of that farm boy out, which I think really makes the character work. And then, of course, finding out that he did DJ Rubby Ducky. Hilarious. But no, I thought his Superman was just absolutely fantastic. And I mean, when you take over for somebody who's been doing it for years, in particular the character of Superman, which has such a legendary sort of lineage behind it. Tim Daly in the animated universe. You have Christopher Reeves in the movie universe, and there's an expectation there, and I think George Newbern knocked it out of the park, personally. Again, Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman. Even when I watched the Wonder Woman movie, and I'm blanking on the actress, I could walk over there right now and find her name out, but I'm not going to. Because the point I'm saying is, she's great, but when I hear Wonder Woman, even when I'm watching that movie, I hear Susan Eisenberg's voice. It's just wonderful. Mike and Rosenbaum, mind you, this is somebody who did Lex Luthor in the Smallville series. But here, he's the Flash, and he's perfect for the Flash. He's perfect as Wally West. My Flash isn't Bart Allen or Barry Allen, it's Wally West. And it's because of Michael Rosenbaum's performance here. Phil Lamar, just... he's just such a great voice actor of African-American characters. There's many African-American voice actors who do great African-American characters. Michael Richardson... if I say Michael Clark Richardson, I think I'm getting it wrong, but Phil Barr, Keith David, which we'll be talking about in just a second, Keith David. And just, my God, it's like, when I looked at the image of Green Lantern, It's like literally I heard that voice in my head and Phil Lamar actually brought it to life. I do. That's one thing I remember from when, like, I first saw some of the preview images for the Green Lantern, and I didn't hear him talk. I had a certain idea of how he would sound, and it was exactly how Phil Lamar played him. It was like, my God, that's perfect. I think Maria Canales actually stole the show as Hot Girl, because she was just amazing in the role, and just owned that character, and just made that character unique. And I didn't know anything about Hot Girl before, but I wanted to know everything about the character afterwards. And then Carl Lumpley was just, and his very, you know, epic, you know, very fatherly voice for Martian Manhunter that just worked so well. The entire voice cast nailed it out of the park, and it's, they played the characters in a way to where you see them as heroes, but you also felt them being human. And that's the important thing, is that if they played it too grandiose and put these characters too high, you know, you wouldn't connect with these characters. But they add enough humidity, humanity, and naturalness to these characters, and they were very relaxed in it too, that it allowed you to connect with these characters, even though these are characters who are lifting, you know, entire buildings over their heads, you know, running at the speed of light, or are wielding an electrified mace, or have a ring that creates constructs that attack people. You know, even though they're doing that, that humanity is there, and that's really what all these voice actors did, is they added that humanity that just made the characters perfect. I mean, the characters, like, Kevin Conroy's Batman was great and damn near close to perfect before, but he really made it perfect here. And the same can be said for everybody else. And I use Kevin Conroy because, again, he's the one who's been doing this work the longest, quite frankly, since 1992. So it's like, this point, 2001, he's almost 10 years working in the DC animated universe. And then, of course, you have all the supporting characters. I mean, we'll go down. I'll look, see who I can see. Christian Bauer as Mera. And with the Aquaman, just was wonderful as the Queen. Powers Booth. I love his sliminess as Gorilla Grodd. Clancy Brown is Lex Luthor. What more do you have to say? I mean, I know a lot of people probably of the next generation know him better for SpongeBob, but to me, Mike Clancy Brown is not a talking squid. He is the diabolical Lex Luthor. And what, again, going back to that humanity and what they allowed these people to add to these characters, rather than just being the suave businessman, there's a bit of humanity there to where there are just times where you just connect with Lex Luthor. One of my favorite interactions that involved Clancy Brown was the episode with the Overlords. Yeah, the Just Lords. And the point to where Superman has to make a deal with Luthor, and they're just talking. He's like, it's my pleasure. It's like... Corey Burton as Brainiac, Forger, Metallo, Toyman, Wizard. Outside of Brainiac and Forger, he was pretty much in one episode, wasn't he? Ian McCann is Ultra Humanite, just wonderful. Olivia Dabu as Morgan Le Fay was just great in that sorcerer's role. Again, that's one of my favorite. Keith David as Despero. It's like waves of awesomeness are washing over me as I'm hearing him talk. He doesn't need a light to, like, take control of me. He's taking control of me with his voice. I mean, just Michael Dorn's in this. It's Kalibak. Robert Englund, you know, Freddy Krueger himself. Felix Faust. I mean, that was one of those first times where, like, wait a minute, that's Freddy Krueger? Wow! Got Medville's King. That's another thing. It's the whole wildcard episodes. the Royal Flush Gang is played by all the principal actors who would be in the Teen Titans series. And so that's jokingly called the Teen Titans Justice League crossover, which I always find funny. And that, and all those voice actors were great. And then you have Neil Patrick Harris as Ray Thomas. You have Michael J. White as Doomsday. And, you know, I think this is really the only time Doomsday actually has a voice that's like understandable. Eric Roberts is Mongol. Brad Garrett reprising his role as Lobo was wonderful. Ron Perlman as Clayface and Orion. It's like Kevin Michael Richardson, but it was Michael Richardson's. I'm sorry, not Kevin Michaels. It's like you look at that supporting list, and it's like it's the who's who of Hollywood voice acting, pretty much. And big name people, and not just people who are like, oh, I do movies and I voice act on the side. It's like people who really do care about voice acting, like Ron Perlman and Clancy Brown and the like. They did an absolutely fantastic job. And again, it's that supporting cast, you know, kind of talked about it before, that really bring this series to life. So overall, the voice acting of this series is just absolutely spectacular. With that, let's move on to story and finish this up. So, we start off story by talking about the overall plot and the theme of the family. And basically, the overall plot can be described on several different folds. One fold is, again, just the overall big plot, and it's very simple. You know, you have these superheroes, they've gotten together to form a team to help each other fight the forces of evil. You know, that are seemingly now teaming together. You know, and then you see that lead to things like the formation of the Secret Society and the, you know, the Injustice Gang and so on and so on. You know, again, they're put in stories that, a lot of them, of course, classic Justice League stories, where they have to help each other. And then there's the individual character plots going on. You know, again, first of all, the idea of trust and family and all that. And really, that's the big theme that comes out of this, is the idea of family. You know, that by the end of this first series, the Justice League series, these two seasons, you know, there is this idea of family. You know, it's why, you know, Hawk Girl's betrayal at the in the final three-parter, even though she comes back to help them, was taken so seriously because, again, they were all family. And it is that there's a poignant scene in that final three-parter. And, again, I remember it differently in rewatching it. It's like, I did not realize it was, you know, Batman who did it. I thought it was Wally who was, because for whatever reason, I remember this scene of Wally just unmasking, like, my name's Wally West. I got my powers this, and each of them revealing their secret identity. But that is the poignant scene, to where there's a scene where it's like, we gotta go in civilian clothes, and Wally's like, you know, well, but what about our, I mean, about John and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman, but, you know, all of it, you know, and then Batman goes, Clark Kent, Wally West, and takes off his mask and says, Bruce Wayne. And it's like, I love you, Batman. But it's just a poignant scene. It's like, yeah, we're family. We're not hiding our identities from each other. I mean, it doesn't take a dick to figure this stuff out. It's like, it's really like, we all know who each other is. We wouldn't be with each other if we didn't know each other's identities. It's, no offense, Wally, you're just kind of oblivious on certain things. Mostly because you read those magazines just for the articles. We'll get into comedy in a second. But again, it's that idea of family, and that is something that is a sort of overall themed plot coming throughout all the series. Everything is, we're building these characters. And you have individual stories that focus on individual characters and showing why they're great and everything. But overall, building that this Justice League is a family. And that's the, you know, again, the idea that, you know, as family, we need help. So I call my family in to help me with these situations. And it's really one of the things that makes this series, even after 13 years, so great still, is that overall feeling of family. You know, these characters feel disconnected on more than just, you know, a team level, but on a familial level. You know, they feel like family. And you come to care for these characters like they're your family. Because again, that humanity that you connect with. Again, what they do so well in connecting to that theme is, again, the way the team works with each other, the way they care for each other. I think of the Legends episode in which, you know, Hawk Girl is there, and, you know, like, I really hate to break it to you, John, but they're dead. And, you know, his family coming to, like, knock him out of his fantasy world of the comics that he read as a kid makes him realize he's in this fictional world. Which, by the way, one of the best episodes. We'll get to best episodes of the series and why they're so good. It's just knocking him out and allows him to differentiate what's really going on in the world, which allows, ultimately, them to come back. And again, just the way, more importantly, and this goes into point two, again, because they develop the characters, and even though Batman and Superman have been there and they've had whole series for them, there's still development that they still showcase. And it really derives from what characters' individual stories is a twofold process. One, they showcase why the characters are great, but they do it in a way, you know, particularly when you come to an individual story that focuses, like, on Green Lantern, with the whole Despero story, which is episode, where is it? Gotta find it. I know it's here. I know you're here. Where are you? Nope, that's not you. That's not you. Da-da-da-da-da, not you. Not you. Hearts and Minds. Had to find it for, you know, Hearts and Minds, which focuses on Green Lantern, Maid of Honor, which focuses on Wonder Woman, Black, you know, Eclipse, which focuses on Flash. I could also say the same thing about Brave and Bold, which focuses on both Flash and Green Lantern. And really, that's the thing. The first season is more about them working together, showcasing why each character is great and working together. And then season two is more focused on character development within them. And it's that twofold process that works very well and makes you feel like you're always learning something. Again, prime example of this. Injustice for All. That whole episode, you know, they set up the thing of Batman getting captured by the Injustice, but then they show Batman pretty much taking down the whole Injustice gang. He could have gotten out at any time he wanted to, but he allowed himself to be captured, and again, it showed why Batman is great. So many times, we'll show Batman as a badass, kicking ass, or as the, you know, but in here, it's showing him as the great detective, not as the great detective of just figuring out the mystery, but the great detective because he instantly knows the weaknesses of each person, and just by talking to them, he turns them against each other. And there's that great poignant moment where you realize just exactly what he's done, to where he set up Chitara. You know, there's a whole point where everything goes wrong on them. Of course, it turns out that it's Ultra Humanite who turned on them. And that point to where Joker sneaks down to kill him, and he's sneaking in, wait a minute, where's Batman? And there's Batman, it's like, oh, by the way, we've got to mention Mark Hamill in this. Of course, as the Joker, always awesome. He also played Solomon Grundy, which, I hate to say that, I think Solomon Grundy was better than his Joker, or at least particular in Terror Beyond. We'll get to Terror Beyond in just a second. But just, that was a great example. Just, that's what makes Batman great. Not that he can kick ass. And as much as it is that he's a great detective, it's not just that he's a detective, it's that he He has the best mind of all of them. He is the brains of the operation. He can take somebody down just through words and debate. You know, and again, I mentioned Terror Beyond, showcasing Hawk Girl's bravery. And again, also talking into deeper subjects. That's another thing we'll get into in a second. But showcasing bravery, Green Lanterns, you know. And again, that's the thing, is individual character episodes showcase what they bring to the team. You know, Superman is the spirit. He is the spirit of everybody, the spirit to do good. Wally is the heart. You know, Wally the Flash, Wally West, is the heart. You know, he's the heart of the team. He's the conscious. Wonder Woman is the love. You know, and love, not in the sense of like, oh, I don't want to fight, but love in the fact that I'm going to fight, but that willingness to forgive, the willingness to come together and come overcome our differences, as warriors, as people, as humans. You know, really transcending the fact that, you know, she leaves the mascara to come to men's world, our man's world, to help save it. Another prime example of that is, you know, the fact that, you know, at the end of Savage Time, she ends up going to visit Steve Trevor, excuse me. For whatever reason, I always get Captain America's real name and Steve Trevor's name mixed up. Steve Trevor, Steve Rogers. I just think it's because of the first name. Like I said, Hawk Girl is about bravery. Green Lantern is will. And by the way, Green Lantern was the hardest one to figure out, but like, it should have been so obvious. It's about will. You know, every episode that's focused on it is like his will to overcome. You know, Hawk Girl, the fact that her bravery in any situation, even though she is pretty much the weakest member of the team. One is Martian Manhunter. I had Martian Manhunter. I think Martian Manhunter is knowledge. I think I had it before. I don't have these notes in front of me. It's like I was thinking about, like, I know what I want to say, and then I forgot it. But, Bratman. That sounds like I'm talking about my sister. Yeah, but and so on, you know, Batman is not will, but the ability to, you know, that ability to overcome in any situation, the drive. You know, I leave all options on the table and I will do anything I need to get. That ability to get the job done no matter the cost. The willingness to make those hard decisions, that's what Batman represents. Actually, to touch it, you know, while Wally is the heart, I think it's conscious is definitely also Martian Manhunter as well. And so you have all these different things that these characters represent that come together well as a team and sort of as a complete union that complete each other, and that works so well. And then, of course, it comes down to also that they talk about a lot of deep subjects, you know, like legends, you know, which talks about what happens to past heroes, you know? And just how, again, it's about our mind that keeps, you know, ultimately these characters will be, you know, the whole, that they're a nuclear bomb destroyed them, that just a metaphor for, you know, if we forget about these characters and forget about, you know, where our comics came from, you know, they become desolate and dead. But they stay vibrant as long as we remember them, and that's what Green Lantern represented in that. So that whole idea about the legacy, and legacy is built upon us remembering it, and caring for it. Ideas on religion and death, you know. Well, let me try to find it here. You know, I mean, the third episode, it's episode 4 and 5 in Blackest Night, which is technically the second story arc, where, you know, it's the whole legal system. there's Fury, which showcases that, you know, again, we shouldn't say that, you know, we need men in the world. Not men. That came out wrong. Let me find a way to rephrase this. But the whole point was to showcase, you know, again, discrimination and how women can do any job and how that idea that a woman can't do a job is unfair. But also the importance that, you know, it doesn't matter, really, that it doesn't matter the sex, you know. People will do good things when they need to do good things. It doesn't matter the sex or the race, and that's what that talks about. So you have, you know, gender equality and racism being talked there. But my favorite by far is in Terra Beyond, where very much is a talk about religion. And Dwayne McDuffie, you had Paul Dini on this as well. But this episode, Dwayne McDuffie, the scene with Grundy's death scene, it's just like, I'm bawling at that. And then you have the whole point that we're there at Grundy's grave, and Hot Girl's just standing there, and it's like, it's one of the most poignant moments I've ever seen in the series. It just nails it on the head. It's like, I don't know what religion is. It's like, that's the point. Or is it, I don't know what faith is, or that stuff, because I don't have it. Because they used to have religion, then they didn't. They evolved from it, as they said, through science. And it's like, there's a poignant moment where Aquaman sits there and says, that's the point of faith. You can't explain it. And I think that's a point for anybody who what faith is. That's the best way to describe it. Faith isn't something you can describe or just give somebody. It's something that you find yourself. And it's just oh my god, the entire episode. Terra Beyond is one of my favorite episodes in this series. And again, we'll get more into that. But again, the reach into those subjects. Another thing that this series did just so well was the digging into the lore of DC for characters like Dr. Fate. You know, Ryan. You had the New Gods. Metamorpho. I'm trying to think of all the characters. And of course, these characters come back for Justice League Unlimited. You know, characters like Vandal Savage. Kilowog. You know, that was my first introduction to Kilowog, was through there. Characters from the Secret Society. Shade. Killer Frost. For a lot of us, that was our first introduction into the Crime Syndicate of Earth 3. So when that movie came out, I understood that more. I know I'm like, again, Legends, which was a whole, again, all the characters from Legends were basically characters that were inspired by the Justice Society and the original Justice League in America, done by Gardner Fox, which the entire episode is dedicated to. Gorilla Gut, yep. Just reaching deep into DC lore, and also taking some of the best stories. You know, Savage Time. I can't remember which story it's based off of. But again, you know, things like the Injustice Gang and the Secret Society are based off the old Super Friends. Hereafter is obviously hugely influenced on the Death of Superman storyline, which actually is part of the problem with the episode, which I'll get to. But again, just reaching deep into DC lore for fan service, and obviously that's not the only fan service that's there. Because that's one of the intangibles that also make this series, is that you have DC comic book history fan service, but then you also have little things here and there that are thrown in, to where, you know, you can see, like, this is, like, for instance, the robot in which Lex Luthor is using in Legends at the start of the episode is so based off Eva One. It's not even funny. And I mean, not even funny in that, like, I'm not making a joke about this. Like, oh, it looks like... No, it looks exactly like Eva One. And it is an absolute shout-out. It's like, wow. That is absolutely amazing. And the comedy is another intangible. The fact that they'll do a lot of double entendres. My personal favorite in the episode with Morgan Le Fay. There's the whole point where the one of the characters they have to visit, basically he's Hugh Hefner. He's not Hugh Hefner, he's a different name, but basically he's this playboy. He has all these big parties and he has a grotto. And there's a whole point where they're going, it's Flash, Wonder will be going to the house. He's like, you read his magazine? Yeah, I read his magazine. Just for the articles. And there's the point where they get to the ground, it's like, excuse me, I'm going to do some investigating here. It's like, God damn it! I love you, Bruce Timm! I love you, all you writers! By the way, another one of the writers, Andrew Kitzenberg, who would go on to do Arrow in the recent Flash series. And things like that. In Made to Honor. There's a whole point where the princess is like, I plan on going out with Bang. And I'm like, if they're implying what I think they're implying. I mean, I know this is a double entendre. And the way it works is, they're really not saying it. But they're saying it in a way, because they know my dirty mind will interpret it as that. So if that's what they're doing, Bruce Timm! Really? Really you put that in there? Going out with a bang? I'm like, God, sign me up. I'll be happy to have her go out with a bang. But that, and just great comedy where Superman's making jokes. You know, Superman's, again, the way they show Superman, not a Boy Scout, that's... The point that he's willing to make that deal with Luthor is like, yeah, well, you know, like, we're like, you made a deal with Luthor? The Justice Lord Superman says, like, yeah, I've had to do a lot of things I'm not fond of today. And Flash is like, so you're not the Boy Scout and you imagine being? Because, like, I never even made to my first merit badge. It's like, thank you, Bruce Timm, for showcasing why we should love Superman. Again, the jokes that Batman make. To where he's always like two steps ahead of everybody. I'm trying to remember the joke you mean. There's a joke in Dream, Only a Dream, which is a very actually dark episode. I mean, the fact of the matter is something to talk about. I mean, the superheroes fail to save the woman, though, despite they really didn't even know about her till right before she dies. Which she's killed by this villain by the name of Dr. Destiny. But just... there's a joke in there that I'm forgetting. Damn. I think I'm running out of steam on talking about it because, like, there's so much to talk about. There's so many of these intangibles. There's so many jokes that I'm forgetting. It's just what makes the series so great. At the same time, one of the things to talk about, not every episode is great. There are some, we'll sort of segue here into talking about where the great episodes, what are the best episodes, but we'll start off by talking about what episodes actually missed the mark, because every series can't be perfect. I'm just gonna look at the list here, because there's really not many. For me, like I said, Tabula Rasa, which is about the Amazo android, it's just, that story just felt boring. And really the only other one that I felt that really missed the mark was Secret Society. And that whole thing started off well. It's the ending of that two-parter that I feel really hurts it. Because it makes it feel, when they're fighting and there's basically the Super Bowl, it's like, which, it came out in November. It's like, really? It just felt like this was just something like a thrown together just filler episode that was really no need to be there, and they needed an extra episode. And it just, it just fell flat for me. And it's like, the whole point was to question, make the Justice League question themselves, and it's just like, it just fell flat on that, and it just didn't feel like there was a logical conclusion. It just felt like filler. And that's really it. I mean, everything else. I mean, let's go to the first season. The Secret Origins is just a great way to kick off the series. Black Knight, it's just a fun episode. Enemy Below, Injustice for All. I mean, I talk all day about that episode. War World. Legends. I mean, the whole thing is dedicated to Gardner Fox and all the fan service and all the love, and they're just so fun to watch. Savage Time. Oh, I love Savage Time because it just, again, that whole idea of Will with Jon Stewart. Again, the fact he loses the power of his ring, and yet he's really one of the essential people to help bring Vandal Savage down. Because even though he loses the power of the ring, he goes right back into that military training and then teams up with Sergeant Rock. And it's fucking awesome! Which, by the way, I was looking at a note that was there. If you've not heard of Sergeant Rock, find Sergeant... Research Sergeant Rock on the interwebs. He is awesome. Maid of Honor is a great one. Heart and Mind is a really good one as well. A Better World. Which showcases that, you know, again, you know, what makes Justice League human. Terror Beyond, I can't praise this enough. It just makes me cry every time. It's just such a wonderfully done episode. Here and After, by the way, is another one that I think missed the mark. The reason I think it missed the mark is because it's two different stories pushed together. One of them, obviously they wanted to do the Death of Superman storyline. And then they had another one that they pushed together. And it's like, I wish they really would have done Death of Superman storyline proper. I think instead of having in the Better World, having maybe you should have just switched the episodes up and had Here After come before Better Worlds. To where, you know, Doomsday gets launched in space and it comes back. But it's like, I would love to see Justice League do the Death of Superman, like, faithfully. Because, again, it did involve the Justice League, them failing to be able to take him down, and then Superman being the one to take him down and dying, and then the whole thing that led to him being brought back. That could have been a great storyline. Wild Cards. Just a great episode. Just so fun to watch. I think Starcross was a great way to end the series. But Comfort and Joy, one of the best Christmas episodes you'll ever see. It's so fun to watch so many of all these individual storylines. It's really the only standalone episode. One of my favorite parts is seeing Superman leave his Superman, but he's Clark Kent here, and just acting like a little boy. He's like, Dad, that's my job! It's like, Clark, are you 5? It's just so fun to watch Clark Kent, Superman, act like a 5-year-old. It's this great story. It's like, I love it. I love watching it every time. And it's definitely one of those things that have become a Christmas classic to watch. I can't stop praising this series enough. This series is one of the best American animations for a reason. Even though there are a couple episodes that aren't good, but they're really far if you train. In fact, there's really only 3 of them. They're sort of in the second season. But the first season, it's just great and perfect. It's everything I want in a superhero animated series. There's a reason after 13 years this is still better than anything that's even on TV. And I know a lot of people love Flash and Arrow, and I love Arrow and Gotham, but still, I'm sorry, Justice League is still better than them. Even though they're live action, this is animated. Because at the end of the day, it's like, it's not about superheroes, it's about family. It just happens to be that this family is about superheroes. And then everything else comes in to support that whole idea of the theme. The voice acting supports it by focusing on the humanity aspect of each voice. The animation just makes them feel alive. And music being the weakest point of it still does its job of just being those adjectives and hitting those notes. And it hits them when it counts is the important part for the score. And of course that theme just like, the epicness and the grandiose and everything throws you into the series. There's a reason this is a nostalgic part of our childhood. There's a reason after 13 years we can't get enough of it. More importantly, there is a reason to why we sit here and say, watching it after 13 years, asking, why can't we have this in the comics? Why do we have to have the New 52? Why do we have to have a Wonder Woman that has that armor? Why do we have to have Superman in jeans and everything, and everybody knows his identity, and all this so-called, I don't want to call it garbage, but just this, what feels to be lazy and just throwing things at the board. The thing about that's really amazing is that Bruce Timm and all the writers, they kept it simple. They weren't trying to be, they talked about dark themes, but they just talked about dark themes. They didn't, like, oh, we need to talk about dark themes, we have to do this, this, this. They just kept the story telling simple. And it worked. We can have this in comics. And we can certainly have this in animated form. I mean, Warner Brothers. It doesn't all have to be Teen Titans Go. It's why we want Justice League, you know, Young Justice, excuse me, back. Because this is great storytelling. And if you promote it right, and you get it out there, people will watch. And people will be hooked. Or at least I would like to believe that. But then again, I get the feeling that I don't know this world anymore. I mean, maybe I'm just too nostalgic about it, but watching it and looking back and just how they kept it simple and just told stories and just, here's what makes these characters great. This character's about Will. This character is the spirit of America. This character's about love. This character's about the ability to do what needs to be done. This character's the conscience. This character's the heart. This character's about bravery and courage. It's like, those are what the character points. Focus on that being a character. We showcase why each character is great, yet never let any character overshadow any other character, and you keep it simple, and it nails it out of the park. It's one of the best American animations ever made for a reason. Justice League gets a 5 out of 5 from me. So that's it for this review of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I had a grand time doing this. Oh, God. I've been wanting to review Justice League forever. And just, oh, God. I'm now, like, on fire, and I want to gather a bunch of people and talk about it. Because there's just so much to talk about. It's like, I know as soon as I get done turning off the record button, it's like, oh, my God, I completely forgot about this scene. Or this bit of fan service was like I wanted to remind myself about this bit of fan service. It's like, there's just so much to remember and so much fun to go back and watch individual episodes and watch the entire series. It's just great, and it just takes me back to a time where animation was king in this country, and I wish we'd go back to it. I mean, hand-drawn animation was king. And part of was, you know, you had series like this, and then you had series like Animaniacs and Looney Tunes and everything. It was just nailing everything out of the park. Why Warner Brothers think otherwise, and why everything has to be Adventure Time, or, you know, Steven Universe or any of these other shows, and why we can't have shows like Young Justice anymore is beyond me. But
that's crazy.
I think that's something we'll get into next week. Because next week, we're going to review Young Justice. And I'm going to be joined by a couple friends who've been on my one of my other shows before. My comic book show back when it was called Comic Book Crazy. I'm talking about my great friend, Spidey Dude, a.k.a. Zach, and Robert Bell. And we're going to talk Young Justice. So next week, we are going to talk about Young Justice. So if you have any emails or comments or anything you want us to do the show, remember, there are several ways to contact us. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Stitcher account, which I have to get to updating, and I apologize for that, but you can find that at www.stitcher.com. Like us and leave us a comment there, and you can leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content, whether it be here or at the Comic Book Crazy website or Tokyo SOS. This, of course, includes the old episodes of Comic Book Crazy and Hexcast, which at some point I'm going to be transferring over to this site. Spectacular Webs. Of course, we have a special thing for all you Spectacular Web fans coming up this this month as well. Stay tuned for that. Tokyo SOS over at www.tokyosos.com. And of course, everything here, John Ramos' Toku videos, Shin Tiger Curls Wrestling, and like Yu-Gi-Oh! And One Piece videos. We may be getting somebody new soon. I have to get in contact with him. The Anticast, Gotaku Momentum, and of course, everything else I do. The Intergalactic Graphic Review with Edwind, CMG's Wrestling Reviews, and much, much more. And of course, don't forget to check out all the other the Anime Next 2015 videos and content that's out on the site. And of course, don't forget to check out all our friends on the sideboard. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey of Houston Lone Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis that he does from Jeffrey Taylor. Spidey Dude and Cool Saga Chronicles site and SpideyDude.com, the Critical Hit Podcast, I'm a secret slacker, and of course, 22 Freaks Podcasting Network, directed by the legendary Scott Gardner. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Again, next week, we have special guests, Zach and Robert, as we take a look at 2011's Young Justice. So, until next time, my Tsunami Generation,
it's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.